Bridget and Cody. Comedians discussing obscure books with witty commentary. Odd books, bizarre books, awful books, oddball books, slightly racist, super racist. Get your fix from Cody and Runjit.
Hello and welcome to Tomefoolery.
Tomefoolery. Hey,
I am your host, Cody Melcher.
And I'm your host as well, Runjit Sowry.
How you doing, Runjit?
Good. How are you today, Code?
Doing all right. I'm excited for this short story, which we will be discussing, Flannery O'Connor's A Good Man Is Hard to Find. Yeah. Runjit, do you want to talk a little bit about Flannery O'Connor?
Yeah, Flannery O'Connor, considered, you know, one of the greatest American writers. She was born in 1925, died at the age of 39, very unfortunately, of lupus.
Which is not just a disease made up on House.
No, it's not. It's not. In fact, her dad also died of lupus when she was 15. She's known as a Southern writer. Mm-hmm. You know, she's one of the famous Southern writers we have. And also very much known as a Christian writer in a sense. Not, she didn't write overtly mm-hmm. about Christianity or anything like that, but she was a very strong Catholic, went to Mass pretty much every day for most of her life.
Did she just like bench press a lot? Very strong Catholic?
Yeah.
Lifted no. cars over her head.
No, but very, very devout. How about that word? Is that better?
That's good.
Devout Catholic. Even to the end, I mean, the last few years of her life were pretty tragic because of the lupus, and she eventually could not walk up the stairs. Late 30s, right?
Oh,
she's
God.
In her late 30s and can't walk up steps. So she had to live on the ground floor of her house, but even then went to Mass like pretty much every day.
Wow.
Yeah. Known for writing very dark stories.
Tell me about it.
Yeah,
this one gets rough.
When she was 6 years old, she trained her chicken. She was a bird lover. She loved exotic birds and of raised course. Peacocks and peahens. When she was 6 years old, she trained one of her chickens to walk backwards,
like you do.
And people loved this. And a news crew came. This was in the early 1930s. And film did a little story on her and her chicken, mostly on her chicken. And they ended up showing this little 5-minute newsreel thingy in movie theaters throughout the country.
Yeah, and so we hope you enjoy this episode. We're trying to change it up a little bit, so obviously you've been listening to the preface that is involved in the actual episode now, and we're going to be cutting out preface episodes in the future, just to kind of give you, just to pull the curtain back a little bit for you guys for what's happening in the Tomefoolery Studios. You can also find us, if you haven't already, on Facebook, facebook.com/tomefoolery. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Twitter, which kind of went defunct for a little bit. We need to work on getting that back together, but we're at Tomefoolery on Twitter. You can also find us on online, tomefoolery.com. We're also mm-hmm. working on fixing up that website a little bit. Doing a lot of changes, a lot of move and shaking, things like that. Olin Kidd, of course, thank you for designing our logo. Rob Scallon, John Scallon for our awesome theme song. Mm-hmm. And some stuff might be coming of that in the future with the theme song.
Yeah.
We got a lot of cool stuff working up with Tomefoolery. Please tell your friends about us. Post it on Facebook and the Twitter and the Tumblr and all that. Feel free to email us, tomefoolery@gmail.com, with any questions, anything you might want us to read. We've gotten some pretty cool suggestions from some people of books to read in the future, things you might be interested in that we pitch to guests when they come on the show. We love hearing from you guys. Let us know what you think about the show, how things are going. You can find us on iTunes. Type in Tomefoolery. Rate us, review us, write whatever you want on there as long as it's constructive.
Cool.
And one other thing I wanted to point out. If you have Hulu Plus, there's a movie on there called Wise Blood that's part there under their Criterion Collection stuff that they have on Hulu Plus that is based on one of Flannery O'Connor's novels.
Ooh.
It's a really good movie.
Nice. I'm always up for Criterion.
Yeah, really good and weird movie.
Cool.
So
check it out, guys. Today we're discussing Flannery O'Connor's A Good Man Is Hard to Find.
Just the story, not the book. Not the whole book.
Yes.
It's also called
It is the titular story of the titular book. Titulared, a good man is hard to find.
I've never, that's one of those words that I've seen a lot of times, never heard anyone say it.
Really?
So I would not have known exactly how to say that word. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could see that. Yeah, because you would think it would be titular.
Or, yeah, I don't know.
Because even Titan would have T-I-T, Titan, title, titular.
That's right.
But that just sounds weird, doesn't
titular.
It?
Titular.
Titular.
But the C-H sound, like titular or titular.
Titular.
I don't know.
Titular sounds like a titmouse. Like it would be like what a titmouse does. Like, oh, you know how he scurried titularly. Titularly. You know?
Let's introduce our guest.
That sounds like a better idea
than
what I was
going with. She's
been
standing here listening to this amazing discussion about the word titular.
Hey, we have a lot of things we have to discuss about the word titular, and we'll have our guest join us.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is the lovely Ms. Mary Jo Bolduke. Hey there, Mary Jo.
Hello, everybody. Hi, guys.
Hi. Thank you for coming to my apartment.
Thanks for having me. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
You don't mind if I call you MJ, do you?
I love it.
I'm kind of used to calling you that. So.
Yes, please.
MJ, Mary Jo Bolduke.
I guess I'll go with either.
Is a longtime Chicago area improviser, sketch comic, and such. You, I believe, used to be on the Second City National Touring Company, correct?
Yes, a long time ago, for a couple years.
So, yeah, I got to travel all around doing improv for the Second City. I believe you've also done a lot of work at basically all the improv theaters in town. Annoyance, Improv Olympic, all those.
Yes. And yeah, I go those places.
And nice. Then lately you're doing more theater, right? Is there anything you want to... I don't know the specifics. Do you want to say anything about what you're doing these days, theater-wise?
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of storefront, small theater that we're all familiar with. There's a really creative community here and a really talented community here in the theater community as well as the improv community, and I feel really lucky to be a part of that and contribute to it and play with people that help me be better. So
nice.
Great time.
That's pretty awesome.
Does your business card say Lady of the Stage? Because I think it should.
So what's your deal with reading, Mary Jo?
What's my deal with reading?
Guys, what's the deal with reading?
Do you know how to read, first
of all? I know
how
to read. Okay.
Good. Literate? Literate.
Yes, literate. Check. Check.
Had you ever heard the word titular before?
Yes.
So reading is a yes.
Reading is a yes.
Great.
Love it. I always have a book with me.
Okay.
Favorite things to read, like now or long ago or whenever?
I'll tell you what I'm reading now. Mm-hmm. I'm reading this book called Blind Assassin by Margaret Atwood.
Ooh.
She's great. I've just sort of discovered her through a friend. She's a great writer, but this book is I got out of the library. It's a hardcover 600 page book.
Oh,
so when I'm on the train and I pull out this huge book, I always feel really self-conscious that everyone is like, "What is that? Get an iPad or get a Nook or Kindle or something." But no, so I'm really enjoying this book. I'm about 100 pages in. So
nice. Nice. Yeah. I have the same problem with a hard pseudo leather bound copy of Moby Dick that my grandmother gave me when I was in elementary school.
Yes.
And so I read it in first grade on the playground. And I was just like with this giant book. And then I every once in a while I reread it like once a year.
Cody was super popular.
You read that in first grade?
He was the cool crowd in first grade.
Everybody. I called my group Ahab and the Crew. And
word.
Yeah.
I'd be sitting by you. I always thought that was sexy.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I would too. And actually, we would be the only three people.
Yeah. But we'd be the cool guys.
And here we are today.
Yeah. We'd have a clubhouse, and the secret password would be "Call Me Ishmael." That'd be great. Okay, so
great white.
What did you read when you were a kid? What would you have been reading on the playground with us?
Well, I loved Nancy Drew. I did. I loved those kind of things, and I loved the mystery stuff. But another one was Encyclopedia Brown.
I was about to say I was an Encyclopedia Brown.
He was
kid.
Awesome.
I loved that.
I've got
sure
a bunch of them still in my office.
You
yeah.
Do?
Yeah.
Oh,
I was an Encyclopedia Brown kid.
He was the best.
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of that stuff. And then as I got teenagery, I found love story stuff. But mostly the mystery was always a good read for me when I was younger.
Yeah, it's a good I feel like that was the popularity of Scooby-Doo. It's the idea that, like, as kids, there's a formula, so you don't feel completely lost, but at the same time it lets you kind of feel intelligent and smart. You're ahead of the game because you can kind of see what's happening and you're trying to figure out the mystery. Mm-hmm. So it lets you it gives you that kind of power mm-hmm. that you want when you're that age that you because you don't have it in any other part of your life.
Right.
I always feel like that's the inner secret of mysteries for kids.
Plus so the forum allows you to have the Harlem Globetrotters be a guest.
Yes. Or Big Mama Cass.
Episodes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I think the Nancy Drew thing was really good for me being a girl because there was a woman that was the lead, obviously the lead, mm-hmm. the character, and you know you identify with her, and there wasn't a lot of that, I think, growing up.
Right.
It was nice to have that. So
yeah, to a lesser extent, that was Encyclopedia Brown for me. It was the idea that, like, you could be the weird smart kid and still and, like, be somewhat popular and not have because everybody else was not doing that.
Right.
And just kicking balls in my face.
So, ouch.
Yeah, it happened. So, it's all right. Cool.
Well, Mary Jo, you chose today's story, so would you like to introduce it to our readers?
Sure. It's
readers.
Nice to meet you. Story.
Flannery O'Connor. Meet readers.
Hello.
Hello.
That was my Flannery O'Connor.
Yes. Well, she's from the South, so you got to do Southern. Hello. I don't know.
She's from wasn't really South Great Britain.
Great Britain. Hello. Howdy. How's that?
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Although I don't think she was like. Anyway, she was sort of a, I would say, probably an outcast as well, growing up there. She was really kind of a dark person. Anyway, this is Flannery O'Connor's A Good Man Is Hard to Find is the name of this short story. But she's a pretty interesting character, so.
Very interesting character. She grew up in a pretty wealthy family, actually, which is not true of most of the people we read. I don't know.
Right.
They often grow up poor. But she grew up in a wealthy family. She was the only child.
I find a lot of Southern writers grew up in wealthy families. Mm. Like, Wolf was the same way. There are a lot of... Obviously, the only one I can come to mind right now is Wolf.
Yeah. Well, she was not only was the family wealthy, but also she was the only child and was very close with her parents. Mm-hmm. You know, led a very sheltered childhood, and then lost her dad when she was 15.
She was pretty close to her dad from what I gather, and he had lupus, which she ended up getting later.
Yeah.
In life.
Speaking of foreshadowing.
Yeah. Yeah, she's the queen of foreshadow.
Yeah, we were talking about this before we started recording. Mary Jo was like, Flannery O'Connor, queen of foreshadowing.
Yeah, she's kind of known for that in her stories. You can see, obviously, if you read this, it's what's going to happen, but you can't help but read it. It's so good.
Yeah, the funny thing about reading a Flannery O'Connor short story is after you read it, if you read it again, everything that happens seems to be leading inexorably toward this conclusion, you know, even if you didn't see it when you were first reading it.
Right.
There's really a sense of fate.
Yeah.
And that's one of the themes. I was looking at various, like, people had various theories on this story. And one of them was like, is this about fate or is this about, like, some choices people make that lead to a bad thing?
Right, they create your own destiny type thing.
Yeah,
think it
Or is it just random universe is an asshole, you know?
Right.
Like the nihilistic, you know.
Shh, the universe is listening.
I feel like it's a mix of both.
Yeah.
Both or all three.
Because I feel like, because if it was like, or all three, yeah. Because if it were just about fate, then I feel like the story would be they don't go to Florida, and then they still get killed by the misfit because they couldn't escape him. But they kind of marched directly into the path.
Right.
So I feel like it's like I feel like it's more about, like, if you put it in your mind, it's going to happen type of a thing. In the same way that, like, if you think your husband's going to cheat on you, not in all situations, but the concept that like women who are or men who are worried that their wives are going to cheat on them, or women that are worried that their husbands are going to cheat on them, and then they badger them in about it the whole time, and then they end up cheating on them because they get so frustrated with the situation at home.
Like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I couldn't even think of the word.
I know. I just discovered it as we were talking, and I wanted to interject.
No, that's great.
MJ, do you have a copy of the story there?
Yeah, I do.
Can you just read from the first paragraph, the very first paragraph of the story, about halfway down? The grandmother says, now look here, Bailey, she said. See here, read this.
Right. Now look here, Bailey, she says. See here, read this. And she stood with one hand on her thin hip and the other rattling the newspaper at his bald head. Here this fellow that calls himself the Misfit is a loose from the federal pen and headed toward Florida. And you read here what it says he did to these people. You just read it. I wouldn't take my children in any direction with a criminal like that a loose in it. I couldn't answer to my conscience if I did.
There's Cody's point, right? So if you think that's what's going to happen, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it does.
Foreshadowing. Foreshadowing.
Bum, bum, bum.
She's the queen of it.
What's really funny though about, I think, the story is that it starts off really light. It's this family.
Yeah.
She sets up the relationships with her son and her son's wife and their kids and then a grandmother that's living there, and everything is just sort of normal, and then it just descends into this, you know, just as from this paragraph that this is gonna go down bad.
it's one of those things where it's like, if this were a movie today, you would go, ugh, this is so hack. Like, because it's really well done, but at the same time, when the car shows up and it's the Misfit, I, being the cynical modern person that I am, was just like, really? Out of all of the cars in all of Florida, you just happen to walk into mine? Like, come on. That's ridiculous. But at the same time, I mean, it's tale as old as time type of a situation.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like watching an accident, though, that you can't stop, but you know
literally.
It's going to happen. You know? Yeah. Literally.
It is literally like watching
an accident.
Yeah,
accident in all caps. We had an accident.
Well, and like, talk about foreshadowing and talk about creating your own destiny I blanked on the word again. Mary Jo, would you mind?
The self-fulfilling prophecy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
She wears a hat and a dress so that if they get in an accident, they will know that she's a lady.
She's a lady, right.
And then that becomes the whole theme of that last arc.
Yes.
Is her being a lady.
Right.
It's.
This is a tangent, but my mother used to always make it, before we went to the doctor's office, she's like, make sure your underwear doesn't have holes in it. Even make sure your socks don't have holes in it, even though you're going to put on a gown anyway. You know?
Yeah. No, that was...
because we want everyone to know that we can afford things without holes in it.
Well, that's kind of like an old school thing, because like my mom used to say that all the time. Like, if you get in an accident, you don't like have clean underwear, because if you get in an accident,
yeah,
and it's like more often than not, if you get in a terrible accident, you're not going to have clean underwear anymore.
Exactly.
So it's not like,
well, and my main question about that is, does anyone like wear shit stained underwear? Like, what's the? I mean,
what
guess,
fun is that?
Yeah,
gross.
I guess that it's just like. Well, my question is, what first responder is checking your underwear? Like, who is releasing that information to the press?
Pretty sure that's the least of people's concerns at that point.
Yeah, like, well, he died and also was wearing dirty underwear.
What a loser.
Someone get his mother on the
phone. Maybe if he had been wearing clean underwear, he would have survived this horrible car wreck.
Tisk, tisk, foreshadowing.
Never makes any sense. But, just that whole idea of her dressing up.
It's crazy.
And it's just, so much.
It's a crazy story. Flannery O'Connor also has a thing with hats. I guess maybe it's part of that time.
It's a Southern thing.
People wore that time and that place.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, Southern ladies still in that type of, in Deep South. Because I'm from Texas, and so they're not, it's not that much of a hat culture. Well, in some parts it is. But
in some
cultures. Yeah, some, yep, the hair. Some parts in some cultures it
Sorry,
is
Texas.
In Texas, but it's more of a Deep South thing, which we are not really part of.
Right.
But yeah, the church hat, it's that whole church hat thing. Fun times.
There's a real, I'm going to throw another big word out at us. there's a real dichotomy.
Ooh.
Oh my god.
You guys like that?
You got guys, that all over me.
Man, I hope we're getting all of these people ready for the SATs.
Should we pause while you look that up?
There's a real dichotomy, though, between the two main characters here, the misfit and the grandmother.
Yes.
It's really interesting. By the way, I looked at people's lectures on this story and stuff, so that's where I'm not coming up with all this stuff myself. I'm not that smart.
Yes, you are. Okay?
Even though I know the word dichotomy. All right. But anyway, there's a dichotomy between the misfit and the grandmother. The grandmother being a person supposedly of faith, but it seems to be a very shallow faith. You know, like, she's really, like, she spends almost all her time in this story manipulating things and people to get what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like she like, first of all, stows away this cat, which she knows they don't want on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of lying, basically. And then she decides she wants them to stop off at this plantation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she lies about that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She made up this secret panel.
She did.
Yeah.
No. It is. It does seem sort of a this superficial personality type, manipulating, controlling. Mm-hmm. But I think that's sort of stereotypical of, you know, matriarch type people from the South. So
yeah.
I don't know if her faith affects that much, or she just uses that to continue as a reason to manipulate. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, what's odd is she does all of that up to the point, though, of the one time it could save them, because she just blurts out that it's the misfit, and there's a very good chance that they might have lived.
Right.
Had she not said that out loud.
He even suggests that out loud.
Right.
He's
right.
Like, it would have been better if you didn't.
Right. And you don't know if he would have or wouldn't have killed her, but... Yeah. Especially because, I mean, he acts like he's not going to kill any of them the whole time anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And still, especially with her, because he says he doesn't want to have to kill a lady, but at the same time, he then ends up doing it.
He's so polite about it.
Right.
So. Yeah, well, it's so crazy.
And he may not have even killed her if she hadn't touched him.
Yeah, right? That's the thing, because everyone else in the family gets really executed,
mm-hmm.
like very deliberately. Which is totally different from the way he kills the grandmother at the
end. Right, right.
You know, she's the last one alive, and it seems like he might be letting her live, maybe.
Right.
And then she reaches out and touches him,
mm-hmm.
and then he shoots her three times. It startled her. I don't know whether you guys have it. It's one of the last things. It startled him somehow.
He fires off three rounds into her chest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just like in the shock of being touched by her.
I saw it as a parallel to his father, who he had killed, because she says, "You're my child," right before she does that.
Mm.
And so that's how I interpreted it personally, was a parallel to his father, who he had killed and gone to prison for.
She does. She says, "You're one of my own children." She reaches out and touches him on the shoulder, and the misfit sprang back as if a snake had bitten him and shot her three times through the chest.
Yeah.
But he was talking about faith a lot too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny because they're both very similar in the sense that they use manipulation to get what they want. And then they use their faith to help manipulate as a tool. So they're.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about the misfit. He's really kind of a deep thinker in a sense. Like, he has come to this place of being a murderer through actually some deep philosophical thinking a little bit. I'm just going to read a little passage here. Yes'm, the misfit said, as if he agreed. Jesus shone everything off balance. They're talking about Jesus having risen from the dead. It was the same case with him as with me, except he hadn't committed any crime, and they could prove I had committed one because they had the papers on me. Of course, he said, they never showed me the papers. That's why I signed myself now. let's see, I said long ago, you get you a signature and sign everything you do and keep a copy of it. Then you'll know what you've done and you can hold up the crime to the punishment and see do they match. And in the end, you'll have something to prove you ain't been treated right. I call myself the misfit because I can't make what all I done wrong fit what all I gone through in punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has no idea the horrible things that he's done.
Yeah, he thinks he's been overly punished.
Right.
And right. So he's going to overly punish other people. This family is super flawed. Like, they're kind of a bunch of assholes,
yeah.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the kids are, you just hate these children.
Really?
I can't stand them.
I thought they were just being normal kids. And if you keep kids in a car on a long road trip, they're going to be annoying. I'm going to be annoying.
and maybe this is just me coming from the South, but I saw a lot of it, instead of through the lens of faith, through the lens of Southern propriety.
Okay.
So in my mind, like, the grandmother lives or was going to live because she upheld Southern propriety. She was a lady. Mm-hmm. And even though saying out loud that a lot of the mistakes came from her breaking Southern propriety, except for there's some incongruity with it when she refuses to say that she picked the wrong house, like that it's in Tennessee. That is actually a Southern propriety that she's upholding by not admitting a mistake, but
right.
At the same time, that ends up actually crashing the car. But the two points in which she drops the veil of propriety are by yelling out that it's the misfit and then touching him, which she should not have done.
Right.
Whereas her children, he curses at her, which is a break of Southern propriety. Mm-hmm. The children it was like a modern South versus old South thing.
Okay.
So the kids represented like modern South of just this kind of like asshole kids. Because like... I was having a conversation with a friend of mine the other day about children and like in the past, quote unquote, and the idea that we were at the Driehaus Museum downtown,
yeah,
and they were talking about how like, oh, kids must have like, slid down these banisters, blah blah blah, and I was like, no, because like back in those days, you even if you were home by yourself or anything, like you just didn't, like that's just not, especially in that class structure, you didn't, just not a thing you did,
right.
You know, you'd kind of be kind of a dickish kid, like you found your own ways to play, but you did not mess around with that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's kind of the schism.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah
I thought it was interesting too how she referred to the misfit as I know you're from good blood.
Mm-hmm.
and You're a good man. You know, I know it. Is that kind of along, Raj, your lines of faith? You know, she's picking faith to manipulate this person, or does she really have the sense of, I know you're going to be fine? She's just trying to say
That's a question, too. Like, is she manipulating all the way to the end?
She's trying to manipulate the misfit.
Yeah, or does she have, like, a genuine... You know, genuine, like, moments of real connection with another human being there. You can't really tell.
I again, had a Southern propriety thing there. Because to me, especially with the plantations, she mentions that he physically looks like he comes from good stock. Like, she's referring to his lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that she's trying to relate to him from, like, a bloodline. Like, that they're both... genetically pure in a kind of way, which would make them of like a higher class,
right?
Like that you're from a good class of people, you shouldn't behave this way. Because like he even apologizes for not wearing a shirt,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
And then,
yeah.
And then he resolves the problem by murdering the
right. Well, and
Bailey,
let's talk about,
and taking his shirt.
Right.
And let's talk about that.
Now he has a shirt.
Let's talk about that she doesn't recognize the shirt.
Oh, right, yeah.
When he brings the shirt back, she doesn't recognize it's her son's shirt.
Do you think she doesn't, or she just doesn't say it?
Well,
it says that she. It says that like she, yeah, because they say he comes back dragging a blue shirt with parrots, and then it says that she can't figure out like in the description it says that she can't figure out where she recognizes it from.
Ah.
Yeah, And that's just after that is when she says, "You're my child," or "You're my son."
Which, right after that, they take the wife and the kid and the daughters out, the baby and the daughter, because the wife starts dry heaving,
right?
Because she recognizes, I believe she recognizes the shirt. I think at that point, I think it's the whole idea of selfishness, and the grandmother is just so concerned with saving herself.
Mm-hmm.
She's not paying attention to anything else because she doesn't even seem to recognize the gunshots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She keeps calling out for Bailey.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's terrifying because when I read things like this, I often wonder, what would I do in a situation like that? And and I think she's going through all the, I'm going to try to talk this person out of this. I'm going to try. And you can, and none of it's working. And the way these bad guys deal with this is just, it's as if they've heard all this before and they know exactly what's happening, and they say, okay, would you please come to the forest with us? And they do it. No one freaks out. No one tries to run. They politely get up and go with, you know, that whole segment is just what is sort of mind blowing.
Yeah. The mother,
you know,
even
what
says,
would you do? Would you go to the forest? Would you try to run?
The mother even says, thank you.
Yeah.
When they tell her to come along, like, and her arm's dangling and she's holding the baby in her other hand, and she even says, thank you.
Yeah,
like, cause they say, would you like to join your husband? She's like, thank you.
Speaking of Southern propriety, huh?
Yeah.
It's really terrifying.
Yeah. it's really effective. Like, to talk about writing style, it's very, considering that it's third person, it's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because you feel like you're in her mind while also not, it's not a first person.
Right.
Well, it's that weird, it's that weird third person yet.
Omniscient.
Yet omniscient, at least in the sense of knowing one character's thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Like the very first sentence of the story does that. Does anyone have that?
Yeah, she doesn't want to go to Florida.
Yeah, the grandmother didn't want to go to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's third person, but the narrator knows what the grandmother actually wants.
Right.
You know?
It lends a... we talked about this a little bit. I actually wrote a bit of an adaptation to this to make it a short play. this is coming up now. it does lend itself to creating an actual play the way that she's written this. So...
would you be willing to talk more about the adaptation in terms of, so how did you approach from the short story?
Well, actually I was part of a writing group and, the woman in charge of the writing group, her name is Jen Ellison, which you all may know from the scene. She's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so she, was running it that day and sort of passed out short stories for all of us to adapt. And she gave me this one. And, so I worked on it for this writing group, and that's where it came from. And I had never read this story before until then. So Jen sort of introduced me to this whole crazy, fascinating mind of Flannery O'Connor. So I owe that to her.
Okay, so this is a game called The Con Game.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Wait, like K-A-H-N? Like Con?
No, okay. Not like
The Wrath of
Con. Not like The Wrath of Con.
Kubla?
No. The
Cobra?
The letters C-O-N, as in Flannery O'Connor.
Fair enough.
I started just brainstorming a bunch of like other people named O'Connor or people with names that kind of sound a lot like O'Connor. And then other things that just have the C-O-N in them. All right? And so I'm going to do a little trivia game with you guys, okay? So here's how it works. All the answers have C-O-N in them, like in that order, you know, have C-O-N in them.
Okay.
A lot of them are very close to O'Connor, but then some of them aren't.
Okay.
Okay? And here's how it works, okay? I'm going to read the clue that I have slowly, so that at any time, if you think you know it, you can just call out your name. Like you can say Mary, just to be short. You can say Mary and you can say Cody. Okay? Okay. I'll read it slowly, and whoever says their name first
can
gets
say
to
MJ?
Guess. Now you can say MJ,
okay,
yes.
Thank you.
And here's the thing, though, okay? if you stop me by saying your name and then guess and you're wrong, then I read the rest of the clue and the other person gets to guess.
Then the episode is over so, and you have to leave.
There's a little bit of a disincentive. You don't want to just take a wild guess, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because then you lose your chance and then the other person gets to hear the whole thing.
Jeopardy rules.
Yeah.
So, you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to keep track of score or anything. We'll just kind of see who gets them. So,
Cody, you're so
here we go.
Oh, no.
I'm just going to drink
my
coffee.
I have faith in you.
All right. So I'll read these slowly. This writer won the National Book Award in 1971. That's the whole clue.
I don't think I even know this one. Who is Sean Connery?
No. All right. You don't have to say it as a question.
I want to.
That whole premise of that show is bullshit.
No, is it Flannery O'Connor?
Yes! It's Flannery O'Connor!
I know she died in like 64 or something. Yeah.
I feel
so...
like I might have even seen that in the bio thing you gave us.
Oh,
yay!
Man. Woo-hoo. Okay, here's another one.
We're not keeping score, but Mary Jo's winning by 1 point
game
right
is
now.
So hard.
All right.
That was a tricky one.
In her 20s, this woman dated William Rehnquist.
Oh. Cody. Yeah. Condoleezza Rice?
No.
Oh, darn. That was the only person I could think of that would be in that grouping. But I guess she'd have been way too young. Yeah.
Right.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll give you guys one more clue, and then just shout out the answer if you got it. She later would serve on the same court.
I'm
with
so
William
stupid.
Rehnquist.
Yeah.
So say it.
I can't think.
Well, she... I already guessed.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
No, just anybody.
Nope, she got it.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
You got it. Yeah, that's right. Woo.
Why did I say Condoleezza Rice?
That's why. That was a weird clue because it was very vague.
She
but
was just on The Daily Show.
I just literally, I'm trying to game it by thinking of con names.
Yeah, me too.
And it's not. That's not the way I should be playing this game.
It's like your brain freezes.
This is
sure
a very hard.
Is.
Yeah. This,
so we're not keeping score, but she's winning 2-0.
Okay. This person's most famous song.
MJ.
Okay.
Sinead O'Connor.
Yeah. Whoa. Any ideas how I was going to finish that? This person's most famous song.
Oh, you're going to sing
was
some.
Written by. Do you guys know? It is Sinead O'Connor. There's a interesting little bit of trivia.
Oh, it's her most famous song is written by.
Yeah.
I really know her mostly from Saturday Night Live.
Ah, okay, from the Pope thing.
Yeah.
The song was Nothing Compares to You.
That's a good song.
You guys know who wrote that?
Billy Joel.
Nope. Prince.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, he actually wrote that.
That's yeah, that sounds about right.
Isn't that? That's an amazing song, too.
Yeah.
All right, so we're not taking score, but 3-0.
Okay. All right. Come on, Cody.
Look, I'm working hard for the money.
This one is kind of culturally biased toward females, so no pressure, Mary Jo.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. This took a sudden sexist turn.
Okay. I also have one that's culturally biased toward males. So
fair
we'll
enough.
Do that one too.
I probably won't know that one either, though.
This is a very popular brand of blow dryer.
Oh. MJ!
Yes?
Con Air.
I knew that one, actually. Right. But for a second, I wasn't sure if that was right because I was like, no, that's that movie.
It's a movie. Yeah.
It's like improv where you hesitate and then it's like, oh, it's gone.
And you miss the moment. Yeah.
So we're not keeping score before 0.
Right.
The moment's gone. Okay, here's one culturally biased toward males.
I'm not going to get it.
Here's the clue.
You'd be so surprised.
This one's very hard, though. I actually would not have known this. Okay. There can be only one.
Are you talking about Highlander?
I am.
So Sean Connery?
No, the actual name of the character who was the Highlander.
MacLeod.
Yes.
Yeah. But what was his first name? Because there was the TV show where it was his like great grandson.
Come on, Cody. nothing.
Connor McCloud.
Oh, you got
so,
it.
That's so stupid. I should have just Connor McCloud.
See, super
McCloud.
Male. Yeah. Male, by the way, women, watch Highlander. I know you
I
haven't.
Know.
Do I get
I
2 points for getting
it.
2 cons in there, though? Come on. Sean Connery was in the movie Highlander.
He
Connor
was.
Connor McCloud. Look, I'm losing really
good.
Hard right now.
That's
let's
pretty
give
good.
Me,
pretty
can I get
good.
Like a 0.5 at least for Connery?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
All right.
It's hard.
All right.
So 4-1. We're not keeping score.
Known as the Brash Basher of Belleville, comma, this Illinois native won the 1971 NCAA Men's Tennis Championship.
What's the name of the one with the people where he does the thing?
I'll give you another clue or two if I need to.
No, it's John McEnroe. Yeah.
A contemporary of.
Yeah, I don't really know a lot of tennis players.
But you definitely know this guy.
I'm sure, but it's like reversed.
He and McEnroe had epic matches.
Oh. I could see him.
Dikembe Mutombo.
Yes. First name, Jimmy.
Jimmy Connors.
There
we go.
I knew Connors.
There we go.
Yeah, I knew that there was a Connor in there somewhere, but I'm gonna let you have that one because I just was literally guessing.
I was too.
You knew Jimmy Connors. You actually know who he is, right? I literally don't even know who that is at all. So
yes, we're best friends.
We're not keeping score. We're 5-1.
Okay.
You guys are too nice.
I'm
literally trying. What?
This fictitious college student, meaning the college wasn't fictitious. This character is fictitious.
Okay.
This fictitious college student, right?
Okay.
Was pursued by a Series 800 Model 101 Terminator.
Oh. Sarah Connor.
You got it.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
We don't need the name thing anymore. You can just say the thing.
Just blur
you got
it out.
It.
Just shout it out when you know it.
All right.
Okay, so my keeping score 5-2.
Here's one I like a lot. In the 1970s, this animal began an amazing comeback. I'll explain a little more.
The toucan?
No. Toucan? No.
Trying to get the con in there.
I'm pretty sure you guys both know this. This
animal made a comeback.
Wait, in the 70s?
Started an amazing comeback in the 70s.
In the 70s.
I'll say a little more.
The Tasmanian tiger.
This animal was very nearly became extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting in the 70s, started to make a comeback through great effort of people.
I know I can't think of it. But it's a bird.
The state is California. And the animal is called the California
Condor.
Yes. Well, I had to speed food you guys for that one.
Thanks, Cody. It's killing me.
Okay. No, I think that one combined with Sean Connery should give me a point.
Maybe one.
We get one point
combined.
From the two.
Okay. Okay.
So 5-3. We're not keeping score.
We'll give that. All right.
You got to give me a chance for a comeback, but don't call it a comeback.
Let's see
some
here.
Call it
thanks.
Oh, I like this one too.
Oh no.
On television in the 70s.
Oh, what is
70s?
This? What is
this man dared the viewer to knock the ever ready battery off his shoulder.
Sean, no.
Yeah.
No, Sean Connery. No, not Sean.
No.
Oh, I know. Chuck Norris, didn't he?
No. You know the commercial
yes,
I'm talking about.
Knock this off my shoulder. I dare you.
Cody, you have no idea.
Jean-Claude Van Damme?
No. I always thought, I'm sorry.
I'll give you another clue.
Was,
he was one of the stars of the Wild Wild West.
Oh, no.
You can just shout it out if you know it.
I know his face, but I can't remember
it's
his
such
name.
Such a ridiculous commercial.
I know his face, but I can't remember
balancing
his name.
A battery on his shoulder. I dare you to knock this off my shoulder.
No, I know exactly who you're talking about, but I can't remember his name.
I know.
First name, Connor. First name, Robert.
Robert Conrad.
Yeah, there we go.
I was like, I can see it. Okay, what are we at? 5-4?
Yeah, yeah, and we've got...
You're coming back.
We've only, got two
only
more.
Only because he's spoon feeding
us. No, we'll do three more.
Us.
We're going to do three more.
Okay. I'm like a tiny baby. Tiny baby.
Let's see.
In the 1970s.
This movie starred... So, okay. This movie starred Nicolas Cage.
Con Air.
You got it.
It's
tied. Movie,
I'm like Con Air.
It's tied, right?
Yeah.
It's tied.
Sorry.
I know we weren't keeping score, but it's tied.
We're not keeping score, but
it's
we are
tied. We're keeping. Okay. So everything rides on this one.
I only got that one so fast because I literally just mentioned it earlier.
Are you serious?
The hair dryer. That's why I said no. It's not Con Air because that's that name of that Nick Cage movie.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And then I thought we already said that because I said Con Air, but it was a dryer. See, you hesitate.
I just
screwed.
You hesitate.
I was throwing tacks in the road in front of your car. Just
you're out for blood, Cody.
I think.
Okay, so here's the last one.
I gotta wake myself up.
I'm ready.
The
to
last
do it.
One. For this one, let's do the name thing again. Call out your name if you, because like the stakes are high now.
All right, fair enough.
Okay,
fair enough.
Okay, I don't know if I know any more Connors.
This man. Starred in a sitcom known for a special episode that involved a bicycle shop owner who was also a pedophile.
What?
You're smiling like you kind of
know
what I'm talking about?
But I can't remember the name of the actor, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
You know the show.
I mm-hmm. don't.
I remember that episode.
Oh! It was, yeah, it was different.
That's
Barry
right.
I don't know what was.
That's right. That's right.
Who? Yeah, Different Strokes.
I know it's Different Strokes. I don't know.
And this guy played the dad
mm-hmm.
on Different Strokes.
I can't
remember his name.
I can't remember his name either. Okay, let's brainstorm. That's Cody. We'll do this together.
I keep wanting to say Robert Conrad, but we already did
no,
that one.
No, he's that tall. He had a long face.
Yeah, yeah. He just died recently.
I'll give you his last name if you want it.
Okay.
His name's Connor, right?
Close.
Oh,
Bane.
Yeah, Conrad Bane.
Conrad
I remembered
Bane.
It when you said close. I was like, oh, Conrad. Okay, we tied that one. 6-6. Let's do this.
That's
fine.
That's it. It's a tie. It's a Woo! Tie. Because
no,
once,
someone must
once
die.
You discuss once the topic of the Different Strokes bicycle shop pedophile episode comes up, you can't go anywhere from there.
True.
It's just
man.
Too awkward.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything starts out lighthearted and
that was such a
bike shop in.
Yeah.
That was a weird episode.
That was such a weird episode.
Why don't they ever call they should really change the term jump the shark to bicycle pedophile. Man, they really bicycle pedophiled that show. It was going along and then suddenly bicycle pedophile.
Oh boy.
That was weird.
You
the
bicycle shop.
That's gonna be a fun game to edit.
The best thing about that is Arnold left his friend with him. Like
yes.
When Arnold finally freaked out, like after days of like going over there and hanging out, the time he finally freaked out and decided he'd had enough, he was there with his friend, and Arnold just like left. mm-hmm. Like okay, I'm gonna leave my friend with this pedophile. Because
I don't remember that whole episode, but now
no,
that you're
I don't
talking
remember
about it,
at
it
all
I do.
Either,
you know, as
yeah.
you're, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like you have flashbacks.
Flashbacks and tears.
I was way too young to watch that probably when I did.
Well, aren't you precious?
Thanks.
Some of us are old enough to know.
Well, I mean, like I watched it in rerun. Let's be honest.
I'm joking. Yeah. I'm just teasing you.
I know. I just want to make it clear. I watched it in rerun, so I could have really been any age. It was on Nick at Night.
I love it. Oh
are
yes.
Are you guys ready for another segment?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh. Is it also competitive?
This one is the one I was really looking forward to.
Is it also competitive because
no.
I need to win something?
This is not competitive.
Oh, fair
Cody's
enough.
Cody's not into tie okay. scores.
No, I'm not.
So go ahead. That thing I gave you that I told you not to look at, you can pull it up now.
That really should not have been a turn, like a
yeah, right.
that you should have said after the pedophile thing. Like, remember that
all
thing
right.
I gave you? I told you not to look
so
at.
Hold
turn
on.
It
there's a little bit of history behind this.
I did a
this
show.
Segment.
Oh.
Yeah, don't even say it, Mary Jo.
Oh.
Don't even say it.
I'm sorry.
I should have seen this coming months ago.
Okay, so I have a little story, which Mary Jo knows this, but Cody doesn't, I don't think. Back in the year 2000, this was before I knew you, Mary Jo, and I think you know this story. I've told it to you before, but back in the year 2000, I went to see a show, because I'm a big fan of old-time radio drama, as I know Cody is, too. And I went to see this show where it was like a staged performance of The Shadow, but it was like a behind-the-scenes thing. Like, we would see the people on stage doing the Foley sounds and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Mary Jo, but then I didn't know her at the time, but you were part of that cast.
Yeah.
And it was such a great... Oh, Cody, you would have just loved this. It was directed by John Hildreth, who was amazing.
I love John Hildreth.
I've worked under him as director a lot. Yeah. He's just an amazing director.
I took a class from him.
I love him.
Oh, he's great.
He's so great.
And it just nailed it. I mean, it was critically acclaimed. It was a really successful production. It just totally nailed, like, everything about these radio dramas. And they did The Shadow. They did a couple of episodes of The Shadow. Mary Jo, you were in the cast, and you played a bunch of different characters and did a lot of Foley work for it, right?
Yeah,
made a lot of noises. Yeah, and it was a great show. And Cody turns out to be a big fan of The Shadow as well, as am I. So this has nothing to do with our book, but I thought these three people in the room together, we're going to do a little stage reading of part of an episode of The Shadow.
That is so great. All right. This makes me so happy.
So here's the thing. Casting was difficult because, as you both know, there's a lot of characters in these things. And there's various times when, like, one of us is kind of playing two characters who are talking to each other. I tried to, like, cast it as kind of well as I could to avoid that, but it happens. So I just want you to go through at the top of the page one, I kind of listed who's doing what. Why don't you just say whom you'll be playing?
Okay.
Read them all, yeah.
Hi, my name is Cody Melcher, and I'll be reading for the part of The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, as well as old singing Jim, a blind elderly beggar who sings for alms.
That's it. Those are two very
those are
major
my two.
Roles. Yeah, okay.
Yes, old singing Jim. Who can forget old singing Jim?
I'm Ranjit. I'm going to be playing the part of the announcer, as well as a man who donates some money to old singing Jim. And Spike, the higher status thug, spoiler alert, who is part of a pair of thugs who beat up old singing Jim.
What?
Spoiler alert, sorry.
I hope we have the Foley for this.
By the way, any of us can Foley.
Oh, great.
I didn't assign that. Yeah,
this
everybody
is
Foley.
Cluster cast.
All right. I also play two kind of smaller parts, Detective Clancy and the Doctor, because I'm Indian, guys. I get to play the Doctor.
Ranjit, there are no small parts, only small voices.
Well, right. And the other thing is, my dad is forever disappointed that I didn't become a doctor. So, Dad, this one's for you. At least I can play a doctor on a stage reading of part of The Shadow on a podcast.
Well done.
You will be amazing.
Well
done. Award-winning.
So, MJ, what are your parts?
I am the woman who is, she greets old singing Jim. I'm Marty, who is another thug. I do Spike's bidding, the main thug, I guess.
Yes.
And I'm also Margot Lane, who is the Shadow's assistant and close friend, and the only person that knows the Shadow and Lamont Cranston are one and the same.
Bum, bum, bum.
So we can all do foleying. We can all do the Hammond organ, something minor and scary, because that's what it was.
I feel like a weird thing in my throat now. I'm going to ruin the whole production.
Also, feel free, guys, to stop and comment as we go. This is...
great.
All in fun.
This is so fun.
All right, are we doing shadow theme music? Or
whatever version of it we can do. Hammond organ 8. It has to be minor.
I don't know notes.
I don't know notes.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Shadow's exciting adventure will be on the air in just a moment. But first, here's a news flash for every motorist in America. It's about a sensational new kind of tire that will stop your car quicker and safer on wet roads than you've ever stopped before. And the tire that will give you this remarkable new skid protection is the new Goodrich Safety Silvertown with the Lifesaver Tread. This Lifesaver Tread has a truly amazing action on wet, slippery pavement. As the spiral bars of this tread strike the pavement, do you want a detailed description of how this works, guys? Because you're going to get
yes,
it.
Yes, I do.
Very detailed. I want to know.
Okay. I mean... As the spiral bars of this tread strike the pavement, they act like a battery of windshield wipers.
Ah.
These bars sweep the water from under the tire, force it out through deep drainage grooves, make a dry track for the rubber to grip, thus you're protected against skids in all directions. You get the quickest stops you've ever seen. And remember this, too. Silvertowns are also the only tires that give you the famous golden ply blowout protection. Very famous, guys. You heard of it?
Oh, I'm a huge fan. I liked it on Facebook.
Not with tires.
The famous golden ply blowout protection. When thousands are injured or killed every year due to accidents or blowouts or skids, don't take chances. Equip with these life-saving Silvertowns now. That's the way to get protection against skids and blowouts at no extra cost. The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Using advanced methods that may ultimately become available to all law enforcement agencies, Cranston is known to the underworld as The Shadow. Never seen, only heard. As haunting to superstitious minds as a ghost. As inevitable as a guilty conscience. The identity of the Shadow is known only to his intimate friend and aide, Margot Lane.
Jeez.
Today's story, The Blind Beggar Dies.
Sorry, I was playing a thing.
Okay. Street noises.
There beep, are beep, smiles hey, that make blah, blah, blah. Us happy. There are smiles that make us blue.
Evening, Singing Jim. Here's a nickel. Chilly tonight, isn't it?
Ping. Indeed, it is chilly. Thank you for the donation, sir. There are smiles that make us...
Hello, Singing Jim. Wish me luck tonight. I'm going out with a new boyfriend. He's awful nice. Ching.
All the luck in the world to you, miss. Thank you. There are smiles that make us happy and awesome.
Well, well, well. If it isn't Singin' Jim holding down the same corner after we told him to pay protection or move.
Yeah, he don't pay off and he don't scare.
I don't make enough to keep body and soul together. Now, you go away. Let me alone.
Oh, so you're going to try to buck our record, eh? All right, Marty, bring him back in the alley.
Now, wait.
That way, maybe we can make him see things our way.
Now, take your hands off me. You let me alone.
Come on, Pops. We just want to talk to you for a minute. We got a proposition for you.
But now I told you, I don't need protection. I have a license because I'm blind. Please, don't bother me none.
Bring him back over here, Marty. This alley looks private enough. Sounds of thugs beating up old Jim.
Now wait, no!
Okay, Spike.
Hey, take it easy on that blackjack.
Please, wait. I'm an old man.
Shut up, old man. Marty, hold your mitt over his mouth. Don't let him squirm.
Okay, I got him.
I'm an old man. I can't stand it. I haven't any money to pay you, I tell you.
All right, Marty, give him the once over.
Right, boy.
And listen, Singin' Jim, next time you fork over a buck a week, or you'll get the worst. Okay, Marty, dump him over the wall there and let's go.
Look at that crowd gathering, Lamont. Isn't it amazing how any little thing can get a crowd together?
Yes, Margot. But sometimes those little things turn out to be big things. Oh, look. They're trying to get into that alleyway. Somebody's hurt, probably.
Oh, yes.
All right, move on. Everybody move on. Move on. Make room for the ambulance. Oh, good evening to you, Mr. Cranston.
What's wrong, Detective Clancy?
Oh, it's poor old singing Jim. Somebody found him in the alley, all smashed up. Looks like a truck run over him. All right, out of the way. Move on now. Move on, people.
Oh, no. Poor Jim. Lamont, look at his face and head. He doesn't look like he's been... He doesn't look like he's been run over.
No, no, don't. Don't hit me. I can't take it. I can't pay. I can't.
Okay, boy, straight to the hospital with him and make it fast. This old boy's in a bad way.
Lamont, somebody beat up that poor old man. But who'd do a thing like that and why?
I don't know, Margot. I've known Singing Jim for years.
So have I. Everybody knows him and helps him out.
Margot, he looked pretty bad. I think I'll go to the hospital and see what I can do for him. There's more to this than meets the eye. Want to come along?
Yes, Lamont. I hope we're not too late.
Of course you can see Singing Jim, Mr. Cranston.
How is he, Doctor?
Triple concussion. Looks pretty hopeless.
Poor old Jim.
How did this happen, Doctor?
Well, the police report listed it as a hit-and-run case. In my opinion, he was beaten with some blunt instrument. A piece of pipe, or maybe a blackjack.
Doctor.
He's right in here.
Oh, no. Don't hit me. I'm an old man. No.
I'm afraid you won't get much out of him, but you can try. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Oh, I can't pay. I need protection.
Now, Singing Jim. Jim, it's Lamont Cranston. I've come to help you. And Miss Lane is here, too. You remember her?
Hello, Jim. What happened? Who did this to you?
Oh, keep away from me. Let me go. Don't hit me again. No.
I'm afraid he's delirious, Margot. Jim, listen. We're not going to hurt you. You're safe now. Who hit you? Why did they do it, Jim?
They told me I had to pay $1 a week. They'd give my corner to somebody else. Some phony that knew how to mooch enough to pay for protection. No, don't hit me. Don't.
Oh, Lamont, that can't be true. Nobody could be as low as to try to make a racket out of begging, organize them and make them pay tribute.
It is hard to believe, Margot, but there must be something to it. Wait a minute. Jim, listen to me. Who did this? Who's been trying to make you pay money to them?
No! Don't hit me, Spike! Let go of me, Marty! Don't! I can't pay! Apple Mary can't pay either! You took Apple Mary's stand! Now you're trying to take mine! Don't! Please! Don't hit me again! Don't!
I'd better get the doctor. He's unconscious.
Yes, Margot. But I'm afraid it's more than that.
What?
I'm afraid Singing Jim has sung his last ballad.
What? You mean...
Yes, Margot. Singing Jim is dead.
Oh. Oh. No! No!
Oh, man.
That was great.
That was fun.
That was so fun. Thank you.
Cody, I love you doing a two-person scene with yourself. That was pretty,
so fun.
Pretty awesome.
I had to, I always love when I get to play a character who has to cut myself off.
No. Stop talking.
You shut up now. Yeah. I told you to shut up.
What are you? I especially love. We need these answers. Well, luckily he'll deliriumly tell us all of it. If you just give him a moment, he'll tell you in his delirium. Oh man.
So fun.
Yeah. I also like
Apple Mary.
I want to know what's up with her.
You got to do right by Apple Mary, guys.
I also like that Lamont Cranston had to keep calling you doctor. Like, I threw in the other doctor on but just because he had ended every other sentence with doctor. And so I was like, well, we need to keep this up.
This is radio. They don't know that guy's a doctor.
I need to make it very clear. You are a doctor. Doctor.
Well, as his doctor, I'd like to say.
That was great.
That was fun.
I love it.
That was
a really fun show. Just, you could tell. Especially the hitting.
You had a blast.
Not like hitting or anything.
You had a blast doing all that Foley stuff.
It was just the Foley is what I'm talking about.
Oh, man.
That's some fun stuff.
Yeah. Thanks Thanks for that. That was great. Yeah.
Thanks for doing it.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me laugh like the shadow in context.
You were great.
You were fantastic as
well.
Pretty scary. Yeah.
No. Isn't he good at the shadow? Yeah, he's good.
I used to listen to it a lot when I was younger.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's whenever Runjit has me read anything on this show, I end up just sounding like Orson Welles.
You do. So it's our our little joke that we all well. So now you got to actually
be Orson
put
Welles.
That to use.
Yes,
I'm fun. Impressed.
I kept finding myself like standing, like shoulder into the microphone, and just like, what's going on?
That's what we would do in the show, though, because depending on the character you're playing, you couldn't help but get into it, and that was part of what was entertaining for the audience. Because it was as if they were attending a live broadcast of it. So you'd get all into your character, whatever it was.
I have a friend in
I'm
Austin.
I'm making physical choices right now, ladies and gentlemen.
I have a friend in Austin that does Foley for a live comic book where they basically, it's like a radio thing, and they travel around the country. They were on Conan like a couple months ago. It's called Intergalactic Nemesis. They came
That's
through Chicago.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then they're coming back over. They're going to be in Madison, Wisconsin, like in a month or something.
I would love to check them out when they're here.
Yeah. It's a fun show. They did one, like one issue, and then they did a second one, and I think they're working on a third one right now. And they have a screen behind them, and they show the panels of the comic books, and then they're doing like a live radio show, but you're watching the panels of the comic book.
Oh my God. I would love to be a part of that. Wouldn't that be fun?
It's a lot of fun.
The thing is, when we were doing this, and we were... working the Foley and the show, it makes you pay attention more in real life to sound because you think, that sounded exactly like a slap, or this is a better, using two by fours together. So like a better slap than this other thing we're using. So we're going to try this instead. So it just makes you more aware of your surroundings in general, which.
Very interesting.
He does crazy. His Foley stuff is like not traditional stuff. So, like, he'll have, like, a toy car that he, like, bashes on something and it makes the sound that he needed.
Yeah.
And he's just got, like, weird stuff for his Foley. That he just is, like, he has, like, the little things that you put over your head and go, woo! And he uses those for, like, instead of using I forget what the name of it is, the instrument where it goes, woo!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That ghostly instrument. Yeah.
I keep wanting to call it a Eurythmics, but that's band from the 80s.
I forget what that thing's called.
Yeah, I used to want to play it, too, and I don't remember the name of it now.
Oh, wow.
We'll probably edit this out. Oh, man. So, The Shadow of Flannery O'Connor.
Yes.
There's maybe some relationship there, maybe. I don't know.
Well, but, I can do a whole new adaptation, ladies and gentlemen, and make it be a radio show.
I think it could be a good radio show.
How about that?
Yeah.
I'll work on it.
Maybe the grandmother comes back from the dead and solves crimes.
So any closing thoughts on the story from any of us?
Still, a good man is hard to find.
It reminds me of
it's just about exciting as yours.
there's a stage adaptation of Frankenstein that was done by Danny Boyle in London at the National Theatre. And they did they recorded it. They had Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller switch to the roles of the creature and Dr. Frankenstein and Victor. And so they recorded it and they played it in movie theaters. The Music Box in Chicago actually does it.
Yes.
They may be doing it again in the summer.
I heard it was
last
fantastic.
Summer. Oh, God, it's one of the best things you'll ever see. I'm a huge... Frankenstein is one of my favorite top three books. Moby Dick, Great Gatsby, Frankenstein are my three favorite books. And I've yet to see a better adaptation of Frankenstein than this one. I would recommend seeing it when Johnny Lee Miller plays Victor and Benedict Cumberbatch plays the creature. His creature is fantastic. If you get me drunk, I'll do an impersonation of it. But other than that, no. But it's fantastic.
There's
and
a bottle of wine.
The old...
MJ will provide the wine.
I want to see it. Really bad now.
The old man in the show is talking to the creature, the blind man, and he says, and there's a part where he goes, "You're a good man. Someone will love you." And I always say that randomly to people these days. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. But this reminds me of that. You know?
Yeah.
Just and like he's. It's actually a very strong parallel if you really think about it, actually, the idea of like a good man, but he's a monster, that doesn't understand his own monstrosity.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Hmm.
I think you win with the final statement.
My it's a classic story. It's pretty insightful. It was pretty insightful, guys.
A good man is. Yeah, I had this equally.
Well, because you put the accent on the word is.
Yeah,
right, so right. That like yeah.
Not everybody can do that.
Yeah.
See, I
don't know. I think we Mary won, Joe and I have you beat.
Yeah, you guys were succinct. I had to talk a lot to get my point across.
I like your point. Yeah.
It was a good show.
Good show, really good show.
Yeah, it was really just a long advertisement for Frankenstein by Danny Boyle, but yeah.
Did you guys, there was a, there's on YouTube, there's actually a version of Flannery O'Connor reading this, an audio thing, and it was fascinating, but her accent is so thick.
It's hard to understand.
That
how thick is it?
It's like strained. It's so thick that it's actually a strain to listen to it. So there's the punchline.
That's a great joke.
There's a punchline. I think I'm going to do that in my stand-up.
Ranjit, I want you to fess up to the fact that YouTube is paying you to advertise on this show.
They
because
are,
last episode, all you did was talk about go on YouTube.
I'm YouTube.
Listen to Algernon Blackwood readings.
Yeah.
Like you're being sponsored.
Though this one,
tell
I'm
us.
Telling you not to listen to Flannery O'Connor read this.
Fair enough.
Because you can't understand her.
Fair enough. But I feel like this is the same thing as putting a parental warning on the cover of a metal album in the 80s. Like you're just telling us to go listen to it.
True.
Because you want because you know that we're gonna go how thick is her accent really.
Yeah, I'm gonna listen to it.
Like was Runjan's punchline actually accurate?
Right we want to
it was a very funny punchline
you.
But was
it was
true?
Hilarious.
Yeah,
it was a hilarious punchline that will last throughout the ages.
I'm still laughing inside where it counts.
Inside. That's what I want of my audiences.
You've ruined
they're laughing on the inside.
I think that
you've ruined my evening of slumber because I'm gonna just wake up in the middle of the night and just laugh and laugh.
He already
and
knows
laugh.
His evening of slumber will be ruined.
What laugh? What laughter lurks in the hearts of men? Runjit's punchline. Oh man,
Mary Jo, do you have anything theatrical or anything like that coming up that you would like to mention to our listeners?
Sure, I have a little thing coming up with a company called Lost Notes, We're doing a stage reading of a musical. It's called I Can Get It For You Wholesale. And it's going to be three nights at the end of April. And maybe the third is in the beginning of May. I'm not sure. But we will actually be performing the songs. So we'll all be singing full out, you know, with the musical. But ultimately reading the script to each other. So it's going to be a fun experience, especially since the I like to sing, so we're going to do that.
Cool.
That's pretty awesome.
So it'll be fun. It's going to be fun. It's a new experience for me with a brand new group that I've never worked with before. So some people in it I have worked with, but so it'll be fun.
Cool.
So that's
awesome.
What's going on.
Do you know where that's going to be yet?
It's going to be at you know, Straw Dog Theater.
Yeah. I'm doing a show there on Wednesday.
Oh. Yay. Yeah.
Mary Jo, it's been a real pleasure.
Yes,
really,
it's been a great time, you guys. Yeah, thank
you so
much.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, this has been Tomfoolery.
Yep.
A good man is hard to find.
Read it.
A good man is hard to find.
As Mary Jo would say.
Very good. Emphasis good, on me.
Yes.
A good man is hard
Mary
to find.
Mary Jo's clip
is
notes
hard to find.
For this.
I'm still looking
a good
at
man is hard to find.
Just turn that in as your paper.
A good man is hard to find.
A good man is. Italicize the is.
Yes.
Is hard to find.
Italicize, capitalize, underline.
Mary Jo guarantees you'll get an A on your paper.
Yes.
Boom. Done. All right. Thank you all for listening to the show. We'll be back soon. And remember, pros before hoes.
Rose before hose.